Now, the first phase of the inquiry into the 1998 Oma bombing is in its final day, with one survivor saying that when it came to being alive, the line between sadness and happiness was a fine one. In a witness statement read into the record this morning, Mary McGovern described how her body had been peppered by shrapnel in the explosion. Our Northern correspondent, Conor McCauley, has been listening to the evidence. Conor, this, as we say, it is the final day in this particular phase of the inquiry. Talk to us about survivor Mary McGovern. What did she say?
Well, good afternoon, Rachel. Mary McGovern was evacuated from the bakery that she was working in the centre of the town on the day of the explosion. And she, like many other people, were sent to the far end of the town, which the police obviously thought were safer, but was actually where the bomb was planted. And she was standing quite close to the bomb when it went off. She suffered a serious leg injury when a piece of metal, which she described in her statement as the size of a fist, tore into her leg. She was, as you said in the introduction there, peppered with shrapnel. She said in her statement that it took 20 years for them all to crawl out of her body, was the way she put it. She talked about the procession of VIPs through the hospital as she was recovering from her injuries and the reassurances that she'd been given that the bombers would be caught. And then she talked about her anger that that had never happened. She was listening on the link from Australia, where she now lives. She's lived there for the last 20 years. She said she really felt she couldn't make a life for herself in Northern Ireland after what had happened to her. And her statement was read into the record by Paul Graney, KC, who is counsel to this inquiry.
In the days after, official people came to the hospital. Ronnie Flanagan, Mo Molum, Prince Charles, and some celebrities too. They came and passed their condolences about the incident and wished us well on our recovery. And I always remembered them saying, and I held on to it for a few years, they also all said, these people responsible would be found and held accountable. This has never happened.
Mary also talked about her deep sense of survivor's guilt, and that's very much a theme that we've heard from people who survived the blast in the last number of weeks. She questioned this whole idea of why had she lived when so many others, even including those who were standing in and around her, had died. She talked about having to tell her two daughters her story and how they found it absolutely incredulous that their mother could have been caught up in something like this. She talked about how she was constantly reminded of her trauma by the deep scarring on her leg.
Why did I survive? Why did I escape the scene? How did I leave my friends, workmates? What if my mum was with me? Would I have left her? If I wasn't working, it would have been common for me to be in town with my mum. This guilt played on me often and for a very long time, years. But now I manage it, mostly.
The statement there of Oma bomb survivor Mary McGovern. Conor, who else did the inquiry hear from this morning?
Well, we heard from a number of other survivors. One of them was Anne Cullen, a taxi driver who'd been working in the town on that day. She was first aid trained and she immediately ran into the scene to try and help. She said she saw one of the dead lying in the rubble, a lady who she said looked incredibly peaceful. She described her as looking like a princess. Helen Kerr had been up the town with her 15-year-old daughter. They were doing a normal thing for a Saturday afternoon in August. They were out trying to buy her a new school uniform. They were in a coffee shop close to the bomb. She said the noise of the explosion was bad, but the sound of the screaming was even worse. And then we heard from Simon McLaren, and he actually works as a community dentist in Donegal, but he was living in Oma at the time. He had some medical training as a result of having done his dental degree, but he's tortured by this notion that he still hadn't done enough. But he was right in the heart of things. He was going from body to body, helping where he could. And one of the victims really stands out in his mind, a young boy who turned out did die of his injuries. And Mr. McLaren said he could still remember the look on his face. Interestingly, he also talked a little bit about a neighbour who'd accompanied him down to the scene. There was meant to be a carnival in the town that day and the neighbour's children was meant to be taking part in it. So he had taken his camcorder out to record the carnival. But as it turned out, of course, then he was on the scene just in the immediate aftermath of the explosion. And Mr. McLernan talked about, you know, when they got home that evening, that the neighbour talked about destroying the footage. He said, look, there's stuff on this tape that I couldn't possibly show to anyone. And Simon McLernan said to him, no, don't do that. It's really important to show what was done to us in this town. And that is the amateur footage that some people may know of the Omagh atrocity.
Conor, I think it's fair to say that over the past few weeks, you know, an awful lot of people have been stopped in their tracks, really, by the power of this evidence and by how raw it all still is 27 years on. Where does the inquiry go from here?
Yeah, I think it's really the little details that have stood out to me. It's the woman who's identified by her gold shoes, this lady who was said to love fashion. It's the ultrasounds of the two unborn babies who died along with their mother. It's those kind of little details that are, I think, are really standing out for people, the simple everyday things. We're expecting Alan Turnbull, the chairman of the inquiry, to wrap up this phase of the inquiry with some closing remarks today. I think in the course of that, he's likely to address this issue of Irish government cooperation with this inquiry. As we know, there's been a clamour, particularly from some of the families here, for that to happen because of the fact that the bomb car was stolen in the Republic, the bomb was built in the Republic, the bombers came from the Republic, they went back to the Republic. So they think there's a lot of information in the archives or in the intelligence files in the South that would be very, very useful to have in the public domain in terms of this inquiry. So this commemorative part of the hearing was really not about the core issue of the inquiry, which is to try and establish whether there were intelligence failings which meant that the bombing could have been prevented. The last 4 weeks have really been about trying to put the families, or the people who were deceased, and increasingly, too, I have to say, the injured, who we haven't really heard from before, really to put them at the heart of this story. That has been very successfully done, I feel, in the last 4 weeks. The inquiry will now wrap for a number of months, I think, and then it will come back probably in June, where we get into that substantive question of whether or not the inquiry could have been prevented, and that will take the form at the start, certainly, of the core participants, as they're called, that's the families, the police, the security services, all setting out in detailed statements their position before we get into the meat of trying to test some of that evidence and see what findings might be made.
Conor, many thanks for all your reports over the past few weeks. That was Conor McCauley, our Northern correspondent.